The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Chapter 24, page 498, Gnosis and Ananda. The ascent to the Gnosis, the possession of something of the Gnostic consciousness, must elevate the soul of man and sublimate his life in the world into a glory of light and power and bliss and infinity that can seem in comparison with the lame action and limited realizations of our present mental and physical existence, the very status and dynamis of a perfection, final and absolute. And it is a true perfection, such as nothing before it has yet been in the ascension of the Spirit. For even the highest spiritual realization on the plane of mentality has in it something top-heavy, one-sided, and exclusive. Even the widest mental spirituality is not wide enough, and it is marred, too, by its imperfect power of self-expression in life. And yet, in comparison with what is beyond it, this too, this first Gnostic splendor, is only a bright passage to a more perfect perfection. It is the secure and shining step from which we can happily mount still upwards into the absolute infinities which are the origin and the goal of the incarnating Spirit. In this farther ascension, the Gnosis does not disappear, but reaches rather its own supreme light, out of which it has descended, to mediate between mind and the supreme infinite. The Upanishad tells us that after the knowledge self above the mental is possessed, and all the lower selves have been drawn up into it, there is another and last step of all still left to us. Though one might ask, is it eternally the last, or only the last practically conceivable, or at all necessary, for us now? To take up our Gnostic existence into the bliss self, and there complete the spiritual self-discovery of the divine infinite. Ananda, a supreme bliss eternal, far other and higher in its character than the highest human joy or pleasure, is the essential and original nature of the Spirit. In Ananda, our spirit will find its true self. In Ananda, its essential consciousness. In Ananda, the absolute power of its existence. The embodied soul's entry into this highest absolute, unlimited, unconditional bliss of the Spirit is the infinite liberation and the infinite perfection. It is true that something of this bliss can be enjoyed by reflection, by a qualified descent even on the lower planes where the Purusha plays with his modified and qualified nature. There can be the experience of a spiritual and boundless Ananda on the plane of matter, on the plane of life, on the plane of mind, as well as on the Gnostic truth plane of knowledge and above it. And the yogin who enters into these lesser realizations may find them so complete and compelling that he will imagine there is nothing greater, nothing beyond it. For each of the divine principles contains in itself the whole potentiality of all the other six notes of our being. Each plane of nature can have its own perfection of these notes under its own conditions. But the integral perfection can come only by a mounting ascent of the lowest into the highest and an incessant descent of the highest into the lowest, till all becomes one, at once solid block and plastic sea stuff of the truth, infinite and eternal. The very physical consciousness in man, the Anamaya Purusha, can, without this supreme ascent and integral descent, yet reflect and enter into the self of Sachidananda. It can do it either by a reflection of the soul in physical nature, its bliss, power, and infinity, secret but still present here, or by losing its separate sense of substance and existence in the self within or without it. The result is a glorified sleep of the physical mind, in which the physical being forgets itself in a kind of conscious nirvana, or else moves about like a thing inert in the hands of nature, jadavat, like a leaf in the wind, or otherwise a state of pure, happy, and free irresponsibility of action, balavat, a divine childhood. But this comes without the higher glories of knowledge and delight, which belong to the same status upon a more exalted level. It is an inert realization of Sachidananda, in which there is neither any mastery of the prakriti by the purusha, nor any sublimation of nature into her own supreme power, the infinite glories of the parashakti. Yet these two, this mastery and this sublimation, are the two gates of perfection, the splendid doors into the supreme eternal. The life soul and life consciousness in man, pranamaya purusha, can in the same way directly reflect and enter into the self of Sachidananda by a large and splendid and blissful reflection of the soul in universal life, or by losing its separate sense of life and existence in the vast self within or without it. The result is either a profound state of sheer self-oblivion, or else an action driven irresponsibly by the life nature, an exalted enthusiasm of self-abandonment to the great world energy in its vitalistic dance. The outer being lives in a God-possessed frenzy, careless of itself and the world. Unmatavat. Or with an entire disregard, whether of the conventions and proprieties of fitting human action, or of the harmony and rhythms of a greater truth. It acts as the unbound vital being. Pishakavat, the divine maniac, or else the divine demoniac. Here, too, there is no mastery or supreme sublimation of nature. There is only a joyful, static possession by the self within us, and an unregulated, dynamic possession by the physical and the vital nature without us. The mind-soul and mind-consciousness in man, Manomaya Purusha, can in the same direct way reflect and enter into Sachidananda by a reflection of the soul as it mirrors itself in the nature of pure universal mind, luminous, unwalled, happy, plastic, illimitable, or by absorption in the vast, free, unconditioned, uncentered self within it and without it. The result is either the immobile cessation of all mind and action, or a desire-free, unbound action, watched by the unparticipating inner witness. The mental being becomes the eremite soul alone in the world, and careless of all human ties, or the saint soul that lives in a rapturous God nearness, or felicitous identity, and in joyful relations of pure love and ecstasy towards all creatures. The mental being may even realize the self in all three planes together. Then he is all things alternately, successively, or at once. Or he may transform the lower forms into manifestations of the higher state. He may draw upward the childlikeness or the inert irresponsibility of the free physical mind, or the free vital mind's divine madness and carelessness of all rules, proprieties, harmonies, and color, or disguise with them the ecstasy of the saint, or the solitary liberty of the wandering eremite. Here again, there is no mastery, no sublimation of the nature by the soul in the world, but a double possession by the freedom and delight of the mental, spiritual, infinite within and without, by the happy, natural, and unregulated play of the mind nature. But since the mental being is capable of receiving the gnosis in a way in which the life soul and physical soul cannot receive it, since he can accept it with knowledge, though only the limited knowledge of a mental response, he may, to a certain extent, govern by its light his outer action, or, if not that, at least bathe and purify in it his will and his thinkings. But mind can arrive only at a compromise between the infinite within and the finite nature without. It cannot pour the infinity of the inner being's knowledge and power and bliss with any sense of fullness into its external action, which remains always inadequate. Still, it is content and free because it is the Lord within who takes up the responsibility of the action, adequate or inadequate, assumes its guidance, and fixes its consequence. But the Gnostic soul, the Vijnanamaya Purusha, is the first to participate not only in the freedom, but in the power and sovereignty of the eternal. For it receives the fullness. It has the sense of plenitude of the Godhead in its action. It shares the free, splendid, and royal march of the infinite, is a vessel of the original knowledge, the immaculate power, the inviolable bliss, transmutes all life into the eternal light, and the eternal fire, and the eternal wine of the nectar. It possesses the infinite of the self, and it possesses the infinite of nature. It does not so much lose as find its nature self in the self of the infinite. On the other planes to which the mental being has easier access, man finds God in himself, and himself in God. He becomes divine in essence rather than in person or nature. In the gnosis, even the mentalized gnosis, the divine eternal possesses, changes, and stamps the human symbol, envelops, and partly finds himself in the person and nature. The mental being at most receives or reflects that which is true, divine, and eternal. The Gnostic soul reaches a true identity, possesses the spirit and power of the truth nature. In the gnosis, the dualism of Purusha and Prakriti, soul and nature, two separate powers complementary to each other, the great truth of the Sankhyas founded on the practical truth of our present natural existence disappears in their Bayun entity, the dynamic mystery of the occult supreme. The truth being is the Hara Gauri of the Indian iconological symbol. It is the double power, masculine, feminine, born from and supported by the supreme Shakti of the Supreme. The Bayun body of the Lord and his spouse, Ishwara and Shakti, the right half male, the left half female. Therefore, the truth soul does not arrive at self-oblivion in the infinite. It comes to an eternal self-possession in the infinite. Its action is not irregular. It is a perfect control in an infinite freedom. In the lower planes, the soul is naturally subject to nature, and the regulating principle is found in the lower nature. All regulation there depends on the acceptance of a strict subjection to the law of the finite. If the soul on these planes withdraws from that law into the liberty of the infinite, it loses its natural center and becomes centerless in a cosmic infinitude. It forfeits the living harmonic principle by which its external being was till then regulated, and it finds no other. The personal nature, or what is left of it, merely continues mechanically for a while its past movements, or it dances in the gusts and falls of the universal energy that acts on the individual system rather than in that system. Or it strays in the wild steps of an irresponsible ecstasy, or it remains inert and abandoned by the breath of the spirit that was within it. If, on the other hand, the soul moves in its impulse of freedom towards the discovery of another and divine center of control through which the infinite can consciously govern its own action in the individual, it is moving towards the gnosis, where that center pre-exists, the center of an eternal harmony and order. It is when he ascends above mind and life to the gnosis that the Purusha becomes the master of his own nature, because subject only to supreme nature. For there, force or will is the exact counterpart, the perfect dynamis of the divine knowledge. It is the imminent and compelling gaze of the Ishwara, its luminous governing power, a power not to be hedged in or denied, imposes its self-expressive force on all the action and makes true and radiant and authentic and inevitable every movement and impulse. Pausing at the top of page 503 to be continued.